It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Once again, good evening, film lovers. This is Film Sociology, a film talk show on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. Matthew Sosi cannot be here, so filling in again from Nouveau News Weekly, Sam Watermeyer. Sam, good to see you again.
You too. Third time's a charm. I'm going to try to make this the Godfather 3 of Film Sociology episodes. I know that sounds kind of gross because a lot of people don't like that one, but actually my mother went into labor with me in a movie theater while she was seeing The Godfather Part 3, so kind of has a special place in my heart. But anyway, I know, right? I'm grateful to be back on. I'm also grateful to have Craig Mintz. He is the executive director of the Indie Film Fest, which is coming up July 16th. He is also the director of the IMAX at the Indiana State Museum, which, in my opinion, is the best IMAX theater in the state.
Period.
Thank you for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure. I always love being in the studio with you guys.
Good. Unfortunately, we're not going to get to you right away.
Okay, that's fine.
We will be back, though.
I'll just soak in the nerdy goodness.
More on that later.
Yes. First, we're actually going to get to the new Terminator film, Terminator Genesis.
John, you can do this. You just go and you don't look back.
Life, I prepared my son to lead humanity in the fight against the machines.
On this night, we take back our world!
There was one thing I could never prepare him for.
The machines tried to rig the game, send a Terminator back to the time before the war to kill my mother.
I'll go back. Let me save her.
We've been prepping for you to arrive for over a decade.
We?
The Terminator.
It is nice to meet you.
I've been trying to teach him to blend in. I know it needs work.
John.
Hi, Mom.
How can you be here?
What are you doing?
John!
What have they done to my son?
Survival's what you taught me.
Get out.
Not machine. Not man. I'm more.
I can't leave him.
Whatever they did to John, we need a reversal.
Everything's changed. We are humanity's last hope.
Load up.
I've
been waiting for you.
You gotta get him off me!
I'll be back.
What?
Now, I know a lot of people are cynical about the idea of a fifth Terminator film. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger can only say, I'll be back so many times before it gets stale. But in many ways, I think the Terminator franchise is ideal for a reboot, mostly because its time travel element allows filmmakers to play with the mythos of the series. Genesis goes back to the events of the first film, following future resistance fighter Kyle Reese as he travels back to 1984 to protect Sarah Connor. She is, of course, the mother of John Connor, who is humanity's last great hope against killer robots in the future. What's admirable about this film is that it has really lovingly crafted, almost shot-for-shot recreations of scenes from the original Terminator. And you can tell that this one is made by true Terminator fans rather than just major studio executives looking for a cash grab. It is better, I'd say, if you have strong sentimental attachment or nostalgia for the first two Terminator films. I'm not so sure how well it stands on its own. Craig, do you have that nostalgia for the first Terminator films? Are you a Terminator fan?
Oh, yeah. Terminator 1 and T2. I mean, T2 was kind of that movie you just saw and you're like, oh, wow, that's pretty boss. So definitely, definitely a, that was period. That was a period comment, by the way. So to hear that, I've not seen this one yet. And it's definitely still on the list. Post-festival, I usually try to rake in all those movies that I haven't been able to see over the last 3 or 4 months, which are typically those kind of summer blockbustery movies. It's on there, and I'm kind of, you know, by your review, I'm piqued. My interest is piqued. I'm definitely going to have to check it out.
It is worth seeing. It's better than Terminator 3 and Terminator Salvation, which I guess isn't saying much. So yeah. Not a whole lot to say there. Let's just go ahead and move on to something that's probably closer to Craig's heart here. Let's talk about your history with the Indie Film Fest. Now, if I remember correctly, you've been the executive director for 5 years?
Something like that, yeah. I've been with the festival, I think this will be my 8th year. 7th or 8th, I can't remember. Time flies so quickly when you're involved with the Indie Film Fest. Started out as doing programming and kind of worked my way up through the ranks since then. Executive director now. We have a board of about 12 folks, and we're all volunteers. So we all do this kind of for the love of the programming and for the film. We really enjoy bringing films to Indianapolis that wouldn't normally see a theatrical run. So kind of our mission is to create an environment around film and a discussion around film. So we like to show those movies that don't necessarily come this way.
Now, I'm curious, since you've been with this festival for quite a few years, how has your approach to it changed since you started, if at all?
I'm pretty much a creature of habit. It's obviously changed over the years. I don't think anything cannot change progressively, you know, year after year. I always went into this with a very power to the people kind of motto. You know, I've always, from a programming standpoint, you know, there are people out there that watch these movies. They watch all of these movies. And it's not one person that dictates these movies. It's groupthink, you know. It's a group of people that are saying, you know, we like these movies. We rate these movies really well. And we like these movies and we rate these movies really well. Let's bring these together and make this film festival. So it's always been kind of like, I'm, you know, a ringleader of all of this stuff, making sure people are marching in the right direction. But it's always been kind of this, you know, decision process of the people, you know. So, I kind of like it that way. You know, you never want something to be one person's vision for something, especially, you know, an all-volunteer organization, a film festival. There's so many different people in this market, so much diversity. It's like, let's let everybody else decide what it is that they want to see. So, we've always kind of done well, I think, with that, because we always do stay on cuff as far as, like, what's going on in society, you know, what's new, what's hip, what's, you know, what's the next thing coming down the line. And we can kind of stay with that because it's always a different set of eyes looking for movies or picking films or having a voice at what we say. So
Now, what's kind of different and special about this year's festival is that it has more films with ties to Indiana than ever before.
Yeah, and that was just not anything that we sought after. I mean, we've always sought to, like, highlight local, you know, films that are made locally or made by folks that are from Indiana or Indianapolis. You know, we call it our Hoosier lens. And, you know, progressively over the years, we've seemed to get more and more and more. And this year, kind of just, it spiked. It, like, jumped through the roof. And what's great is the talent that comes from the state or is taking place in the state is amazing. Like, the quality of the films that we saw this year from Hoosier filmmakers or that were made here in Indiana is ridiculous. I mean, it is so good. It is so exciting. Given everything that's going on, you know, with, you know, potential tax incentives down the road, you know, the market taking a look at production here in this state as a viable option for both, you know, filmmaking and jobs and stuff like that. It's really interesting to see these films come out of the gate this year, and they're all really solid. They're great content. They're really fun to watch, and you know, people are honing their skills, and it's exciting.
Speaking of the ones shot in Indiana, one of the ones I was most impressed with was Chrysalis.
Mm-hmm.
It's a zombie film, and it's partially shot in Gary, Indiana,
yeah,
which kind of made me chuckle. It's perfect for that kind of genre film.
Gary actually has a film office. Like, they go after business that Chicago can't contain, and if they need certain visuals that Chicago doesn't have, Gary brings them down to Gary. Like, they do a really good job of actually doing a lot of production work up there. It's really exciting to see what they do.
I mean, you know, I think the, well, maybe it's not really a stereotype, but there's this notion that Gary, Indiana is kind of a sketchy, seedy place.
You wave at it as you drive down the highway or whatever.
Right. And, you know, of course, that's perfect for kind of a post-apocalyptic zombie thriller.
You know, if anybody stops over in Gary, though, I think you'd be surprised. Like, it's, you know, obviously Gary's had some issues, but, like, they're coming back. They've got some really amazing offerings, and, you know, the fact that they're going after this film production business is really kind of exciting.
Now, speaking of the Hoosier Lens films, I'll get to kind of my picks of the best in a minute here, but what were the ones you were most impressed with this year?
Oh, man, that's like picking your favorite child. I say that every year when somebody asks me. From a Hoosier Lens standpoint, the short films are great. Claire and the Keys, which is an animated film from some guys at Ball State, is a really cute film, great for the kids. I think Peanut Gallery, which I think is on your list, is an amazing documentary. One Day in April is another great documentary about the Little 500. Chrysalis is obviously a narrative zombie film, so that's a lot of fun. It's really tough to kind of pick that one, right?
Yeah.
Plus, then they know where I live. They'd probably all come find me, beat me up. So I'm just going to stick with they're all really good, but it's a good lineup.
Speaking of that, I'm curious what's the protocol in terms of voicing your opinion on these movies? I imagine that's kind of
me
tricky.
Personally, or
yeah, I imagine that's kind of tricky territory given your position.
I always play nicely. I try not to impose my opinion on people. Truly, when we design the programming for this as a group, there's something for everybody. You know, obviously everybody has an opinion when it comes to movie. You don't need to know my opinion. You know, you'll tell, you know, if I'm sitting there watching a movie or whatever. But it's just, you know, they're all really good. And I know that sounds kind of, you know, unfair or whatever, but like they are, they're all kind of really good. I like them all, and I hate to pick one just because they're all good in their own merit for their own reason. So yeah, I always walk that fine line, you know. I never have kind of that one. I let everybody else tell me which ones they like.
Well, that's a perfect segue into what I'm about to do.
You're gonna tell me which ones you like?
Yes, yes, I am going to impose my opinion on you. These
have at it.
Buckle in.
Yes, buckle up. As Samuel L. Jackson said, hold on to your butts. These are my picks for the top three movies to see at the Indie Film Fest from the ones I've seen. And these are all Hoosier Lens films, and they are in the Matter of Fact feature category, which is, of course, documentaries. Let's start with number three, and I won't tell you the title. Let's just listen to the trailer, and then I'll take it from there.
You don't really need a knowledge of music to play this thing. If you have a sense of rhythm or something like that, you can make up things. So, if you blow into them. And then you have the ever-popular guys in blue suits who kick bells. When I was first starting in the 70s, I worked for a sculptor, and he came out of a group who were making monumental sculptures. You know, be big or go home. I guess it was sort of perverse on my part, but just to do it backwards, do it upside down, and to make small pieces. And also, I always had a problem with where I was living. Like, I would be asked to leave all the time, so I had to find a new place. It was a lot easier to make really tiny things and put them in a suitcase. For sculpture and the things that I do, there's a lot of problem solving. What I try to do is I try to consider everything. It's a lot to think about. It's a thousands and thousands of decisions, you know. These are the wings, and then the legs. I've been working on this for about 5 months, 6 months, something like that.
If you ever asked David, where do you get these ideas? Have you ever asked him? And has he given you the pat answer? I have a book, Ideas for Skinny Sculptors.
Okay, that is called Curious Worlds, the Art and Imagination of David Beck. And he is the kind of artist who will make you feel horribly lazy. He's just incredibly dedicated to his craft. He makes these painstakingly elaborate miniature sculptures, which just exhibit a level of skill and patience that seems impossible. Really interesting documentary. Although it's, you know, kind of understated and low key, it inspires just as much awe as Beck's art itself. Craig, have you seen this one?
I have. It's beautiful stuff. He's an amazing character too. He has been traveling around with the film, and we tried to get him here, but I think he's like on vacation or something this week, so he won't be in. Fascinating guy, lived here in Indiana for quite some time. I want to say maybe down at Bloomington. Did he go to IU? I forget kind of where his tie is to the state, but he lived in Indiana for quite some time. And yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's very reminiscent of a film, Marwin Call, which came out quite a few years back. I liked this one probably. I mean, Marwin Call is different, but very similar. So they're both beautiful films. But yeah. for the art lover out there, and probably maybe somebody that loves the artist maybe more than the art. It's a definite watch. It's a really good doc.
This next one works pretty well as a companion piece to Curious Worlds. It's about another eccentric, actually even more eccentric artist. This is called Almost There. Let's take a listen to the trailer for that.
Incredible. We're really getting in the zone right now, I've got to tell you. Peter, you've done so much good work.
Just calm down.
Okay.
Pretty please, come here. I do portraits here. Let me do it free.
These two guys took a little interest in me.
What else do you got in here?
Go look.
Peter told us he had a lot more art at his house.
We lived at the same home since 1941.
What a mess here, huh?
Everything I had was here.
Walls all collapsed, ceilings all collapsed.
He'd patch things up with pieces of plywood, like a fort that an 8-year-old kid would build out in a field somewhere.
See, now, before I didn't like all that garbage, but the more I look at it, the more interesting it gets.
If anything happens in this house and all your work is ruined, that would be devastating for you, Peter. Right? Peter?
Peter seemed like a worthy project. We could use our skills to help put together an exhibit.
In the case of Peter Anton,
wow.
It was like a living artist, you know. I think Peter is the real deal.
This is a big moment for you.
I'm deliriously happy.
It's going to be unique.
We have a crate that is heavy with art supplies.
Beautiful. Could also use a better walker. A walker needs a walker.
He's become very dependent on you.
You are my best friend.
There will be bigger results than you'll have ever thought there could be.
This man has a horrible reputation in our town. You should have checked into his background.
So I head to the newsroom and say, can you pull me anything out on this person? Youth center operator held in raid.
We freaked out.
The first reaction was, the show must come down.
Oh, if the artist is dead, we don't have to worry about if the artist is alive. Let's stay away from that.
We have devoted years to this.
I am not just a project.
Those articles brought more attention to my home.
It's unsafe.
Where am I gonna live now?
I think it's time for Peter to pull himself out of Peter.
You don't want to bring what you're running away from here.
The artist who suffers is common. It's called fortitude.
Okay, and the artist in that film, Peter Anton, is from East Chicago, Indiana, and that's what ties it with the Hoosier Lens category. In a way, this movie is kind of about creation amid destruction. Peter Anton spent several decades working out of his dilapidated basement, which was just crawling with mold. And in this film, the directors kind of hang out with him there and eventually bring him out into public life more. They help him get an exhibit, but then they also discover some disturbing things about his past. Kind of like his art, there's more to Anton's life than meets the eye, and this film will just keep you guessing about what will happen next. I just thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it's really harrowing and inspiring stuff. Craig, you've seen this one?
You know, this one I have not seen, and I always get these two mixed up. We've got the two artist documentaries, and I always get them flip-flopped. But no, I have not seen this one. I like to keep a couple movies that I actually get to watch in the theater with groups. It's kind of always been a thing for me to make sure that, you know, I still am just as intrigued as everybody else when it comes to seeing movies during the film festival. So this is one that I'm saving to see because I know the filmmakers are coming down. So I'd like to check it out with those guys.
Cool. Well, finishing off my list here, let's get to number one. Let's take a listen to the trailer for that.
Tell me about Dad's grief.
Dad's grief is very buried under work.
Grief about what?
I
I didn't realize until my mid-20s that I was missing certain memories. All the good memories were faded, hazy. My most vivid memory was of her death itself. I asked my parents if, for the first time, we could talk and attend family therapy.
You don't want to talk about it anymore.
I'd prefer not to.
Do you know why?
I just prefer to eat and talk about something else. I can't do therapy all day long. I'm just incapable.
I might cook my asparagus some more.
You're clearly, like, really angry.
No, I'm not angry. I am hurt. And
Mom,
sad.
Can you please say that you're also angry, please?
I really think your role so often, Molly, was you were like the ray of sunshine.
Film is called Peanut Gallery, and I actually had a problem with the trailer for this for a while. I thought the scene of the family trying to talk about their grief during dinner lingered a little too long in the trailer, but actually now I think it perfectly mirrors the kind of uncompromising quality of that movie, which forces you to sit in silence with this family and really feel their internal struggle. I think it just perfectly captures the kind of surreal feeling of experiencing illness in your immediate family. Like Almost There, this is, you know, really harrowing, painful stuff to watch, but you won't want to look away. This is my favorite film out of the ones I've seen in this festival. Craig, you've seen this one too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a slow burn. It's a good film. Kind of a necessary watch, you know, to really feel, you know, what this family's feeling and going through. It's a powerful film. And we're actually working with the Indiana chapter of Leukemia Lymphoma Society. $1 for every ticket we sell to this movie is going to go back to those guys.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of just, you got to, you know, mad respect. I mean, it's crazy. It's a really, really good documentary. And Molly, the director, will be in for the first weekend. I think it shows on the 18th in the afternoon. She'll be in. Her family will be down. Which will be interesting because it's the U.S. premiere of this film. It's not played anywhere in the States. It did play in another festival overseas just recently, but definitely, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they react to a movie about them, because it is truly about this family and their experience and kind of going through that grieving process, basically. And it'll be really interesting to watch, you know, this with them and to see how they react to seeing themselves on the big screen and having audiences watch them. And it's going to be a really neat experience. Definitely a film not to be missed. And, you know, the fact that we're going to kick back some money to the local LLS chapters, you know, we're excited to do that.
Yeah, that's great. That's very admirable. And I look forward to seeing that with an audience. I guess, unfortunately, this kind of ties well into our next topic, which unfortunately is still death. I'm sorry. That was awful.
Happy Friday, everybody.
Yeah. I tried to be as delicate as I could, but that was just kind of offensive. But anyway, this is what you and Matt call the dead people we like.
We've got our segment intro for that.
Our the annual show of dead people we like.
there's a pretty big one this week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Yes,
there are a couple big ones this week.
Yes. First, Omar Sharif. He died today at age 83 from a heart attack. Of course, he was in probably most famously known for two great epics, Lawrence of Arabia and Dr. Zhivago. I actually haven't seen, I'm ashamed to admit, I haven't seen Dr. Zhivago.
We know what you're doing this weekend.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a good time to see it. You said you're kind of a Sharif fan.
A big fan of Lawrence of Arabia. I mean, that is like you put it well, it's an epic, to say the least. So, yes, a big fan of him in that film.
The next death is, I'm sorry, God, that sounds so offensive. The next death, I hate to be so insensitive about it, but is Jerry Weintraub. He died Monday at the age of 77 of a cardiac arrest, and he produced many great films, Nashville, Diner, The Karate Kid, Ocean's 11, 12, and 13, and most recently, the HBO comedy The Brink. And I'm sure there's plenty more to list. You know, pretty impressive resume there.
Mm-hmm. Karate Kid alone. I mean, yeah. About the man's feet for that.
Right. So we lost two great ones this week. Our thoughts go out to their families and their fans.
Go watch their movies. That's the best way to tribute. Go pick out one of those movies and sit down and watch it this weekend. It's going to be maybe an overcast weekend around here, so perfect time to do that.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's take a quick break.
Yes, please.
More with Sam and Craig Mintz from the Indie Film Festival after this Blackula track. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show on WFYI, HD to the point, and WFYI.org.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back. Film Sociology, film talk show on WFYI HD to the point, WFYI.org. Hello, Kobe Slagle here. Matthew Soucy is on assignment this week. Sam Weiermeyer from Nouveau News Weekly. Craig Mintz from the Indianapolis Film Festival sitting in, hanging out with us. Indy Film Fest, Craig, July 16th through the 25th at the IMA. So next week on that, but this week, a couple things going on. If you don't want to see Terminator, you don't. If you're not into the Minions.
Oh, that's right. The Minions
that are seemingly everywhere. Flash Gordon is at the IMA tonight in their Summer Nights film series. This
a great
weekend,
film to see with other people. Like, it's one of those cult classics. Everybody I think has a or had at least in my era is like we were watching on VHS or Laserdisc. And unless you missed it when it came out in the theater, but a really fun movie to see with an audience, because it is so cult classic-y. People have these moments that they love in this film. So to see it with a crowd, it's always worth it. Always worth it.
That's Flash Gordon going on tonight at the IMA in their Summer Night Film Series. This weekend, Keystone Landmarks, Midnight Movie Madness, Roar.
Ooh,
do you know anything about
this?
Yes. Okay, because I'm going to check this out
like
tomorrow
the,
night.
What are they calling it? Like the most dangerous film or something like that? Yes. I've not seen it yet, but an Alamo Drafthouse release, I believe. I think they released the film. And it's lions. It's centered around lions. And is it a documentary?
No. See, I don't think
tell.
It is. Yeah.
those are the best kinds of documentaries.
Yeah, Tippi Hedren and Melanie Griffith
yes.
and... I can't think of the guy's name. Lived with wild lions, tigers, giraffes,
bears
for 11 years to make this film. I don't know if it's
and
documentary.
There's like mullings. Like I mean, it's going to be an interesting piece of cinema to say the least.
in one of the trailers that I guess they re-released it in theaters earlier this year in April, and one of the little things in the trailer said no animals were harmed during the making of this movie. However, 70 of the cast and crew were. So, this will be something. Maybe this will be the next cult classic.
Yeah, let's hope. That's interesting.
Go ahead.
Indie Film Fest is next week.
Yeah, we start on Thursday the 16th. We're going to open with Sleeping with Other People, which is a new rom-com that stars Sudeikis and Alison Brie. Trailer's on our website, indiefilmfest.org. It's really a fun film about dating, sex, relationships, all of the above. It's not your normal rom-com, but very funny. Check out the trailer on our website.
I'm looking through, and the website is indiefilmfest.org.
Correct.
Looking through the films here, tell me a little bit about The Bad Boy of Bowling.
So this is from a filmmaker that we had another one of his films last year, and it is an interesting documentary, and I can't think of the professional bowler's name, but it is about what was Bill Murray's character he played in the Woody Harrelson bowling film Kingpin. Where he had the bad comb over. It's kind of like that, but in real life. Like he comes into the professional bowling circuit, and he's kind of this brash, kind of like just throwing his hands up in the air, kind of bringing this bad boy mentality to professional bowling and kind of sparks some reinterest in professional bowling. A very, very interesting kind of short documentary. That's a fun one. That block is actually really a really good block. Another fun short. It's not fun. It is fun. I think it's fun. I'll let you decide for yourself. It's called Spear Hunter. It's in our doc block category, and it is this unbiased look at a gentleman out in, I believe he lived in Texas. He passed away, who was the self-proclaimed best spear hunter in the world. And
there are a lot of competition.
No, and that's the beauty. That's kind of the funny part of this film. Is he was an older gentleman. He would sit in a tree and he would literally drop spears on animals. It wasn't like he was throwing them. He was dropping them from like a deer stand in a tree. And he got to the point where he built his own museum about himself.
Wow.
I don't know if it's still operational. I would imagine it's probably still operational. But another just interesting documentary. What I love about it is that it's so unbiased. Like they go into it with all reverence of this person, and it's truly just a blank slate film about this guy. And it really, all the interview, all the people that they interview, they're all wearing camo at some point. Even the females are wearing camo. It's just, it's a really interesting film. I got a good chuckle out of it. Everybody's like, why did you like that movie? It's about a dude that spear hunts animals. I was like, it's funny.
And not even really spear
hunting. He's just dropping them. Like, there's a comment in the movie from, like, the local mayor that, you know, he was like, at one point he was talking about, like, dropping 3 spears, one in each hand, and he was going to hold one with his foot. Because that was how he would kind of take it to that next level. He started with one spear, and then he was the world's greatest double spear hunter because he would drop 2. And I don't think he ever made it to the 3. That's chaos, I guess, if you drop 3 spears.
Wow.
So that's Spear Hunter, and also, tell me real quick, Shaun of the Sheep.
So, yeah, this is actually really exciting. We do a year-round program called Serial Cinema. It's the first Saturday of every month.
Yes.
We do it between the IMA and the Anthoneum downtown, and they're cult classic, you know, family films, films you can take the kids to. It's $5, gets you admission to the movie, and it also gets you a bowl of cereal to eat, you know, prior or during the movie.
Nice.
So we love this program so much that this movie presented itself, and we're like, oh, yeah, we definitely got to do a Serial Cinema. So July 18th, doors open at 9:30, movie starts at 10. We're going to do a Serial Cinema presentation of Shaun the Sheep, which is the spinoff movie from Wallace and Gromit. So if you are a Wallace and Gromit fan, if you're a stop-motion fan, if you're an animation fan, this movie's totally for you. It follows Shaun the Sheep as his flock gets away from the farm, and he's got to get them back, basically. Very few words in this movie, which is what I really like. I mean, obviously, it's a movie about farm animals that don't talk. But a really, really great film. $5, like I said, get you into the movie, get you a bowl of cereal, bring the kids down. What's really neat is that first Saturday, the 18th, we're following the film with a stop-motion workshop for kids. So if the family wants to stick around, the Ball State guys who did Claire and the Keys, which are huge animation fans, they're going to put on a stop-motion workshop. And I hear you're going to be animating toys. Yeah. So it'll be a lot of fun. That Saturday is kind of we're dubbing our family day. We've got all kinds of good family programming going on. So
very cool.
Yeah, fun feature.
Plug the website. Dates.
IndieFilmFest.org. We start July 16th. We run through the 25th. Opening nights on the 16th, closing nights on the 25th, and we have all kinds. I've been telling everybody that there literally is something for everybody in this program. I mean, honest to goodness, Honest Engine, there's just tons of great movies. And if you're a fan of film, if you're not a fan of film, I think there's something in there you're going to like.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Now, actually, I've been watching Indie Film Fest movies pretty much nonstop.
You and me both.
Not complaining though.
Okay.
Thoroughly enjoyed.
sounds like it.
Oh no, not at all. You and I were talking about mentioning the last movies we saw, and mine was actually an Indie Film Fest entry. It's kind of a romantic drama called Somewhere in the Middle. Sort of a love quadrangle, I guess. And
another one of those relationship movies.
Right. Mostly I was intrigued by the style of it. It revisits these scenes from relationships several times over from different angles.
Yeah, different vantage points.
Yeah, and we actually had a bit of an argument about this one in our American Spectrum, that's the category it's in, jury meeting.
Mm-hmm.
We were choosing between... Oh, I guess I shouldn't say that.
No, it's fine. You know, all films are up for the jury, but let's not whittle it down, because then you're going to give away the winner.
Well, okay, I'll just say that was one of the films up for...
There you go. I like that.
The best film in that category. And I was surprised by how much debate there was. I was curious if you could go into your experience with those meetings and if it's always like that or...
This year was actually rather tame. In years past, I mean, there's been... I know I was privy to one jury meeting that was like a 2-hour. Like, people were digging in. And that's what I kind of like about that process is it's very political. Like, I like my movie, you like your movie, and we're going to fight it out. And we're going to try to affect everybody else in that jury to get them to go on our side. It's kind of an interesting process to watch. This year was pretty tame. The two films in question, Somewhere in the Middle and then the mystery other film. This one had a little bit of teeth to it. I think there was an aisle, and there were people on either side of the aisle, which one they liked. And it was interesting to hear what all the jury members thought about the two different films. What I really enjoy is when, everybody's like, it's really hard to pick. You know, it's like they're all so good, that it's hard to pick. And it's always kind of a testament to kind of what we do. So I like that. But, yeah, Somewhere in the Middle is one of those stylistically, cinematography-wise, is a beautiful, beautifully shot film. Acted tremendously. The storyline's great. The retelling of all the different vantage points. I mean, it takes a skilled filmmaker to be able to pull something like that off. Great film. We're playing it the first Friday, so what, the 17th of the film festival downtown at the IMAX. Plug. So that'll be a real interesting watch.
Hmm. Now, let's take you outside of the Indie Film Fest for a minute.
Which is rare.
What was the last mainstream film you saw in theaters?
So this time of year, it's rare that I get out to go see a film, and I'm a movie guy, so it's kind of like I gotta dig myself into a movie from time to time. So I took the opportunity of the long holiday weekend, and I drug my father to go see Jurassic World. I had to see that in the theater. It was kind of just we went to a 10:30 matinee on Sunday.
Oh man,
it was like us and three other people in there. And I kick myself every time for something like that because it's like I like seeing those movies in a packed house, to hear the audience reaction, to be part of the audience reaction. But I was very excited that I got to see it in the movie theater. Man, it did not disappoint, to say the least. I thoroughly enjoyed that one.
Now, are you a loyal fan of the whole Jurassic Park series or just
not the whole
one?
Series? I like the first one immensely. The second two, I obviously get why they made the two films, and I read the books as well. So, in the grand scheme of things, you have Jurassic World and you have Jurassic Park, and now you have Jurassic World, and those are the two kind of bookend films, and then the other two are kind of, if in my opinion, kind of a spinoff, if you will, side stories. But definitely like the first one. I remember seeing that in the theater, which is packed house in middle school, and it just everybody, like when that raptor jumps out, after gobbling up Samuel L. Jackson, it's everybody jumped in the audience. So
the kitchen scene.
And so you get, obviously that same kind of feel, that same kind of tone translated into Jurassic World, I thought, really well. And, it's truly a love letter to Steven Spielberg. I mean, there's a lot of, subtle nods to Jaws and Indiana Jones and obviously a lot of little hints and secrets to the original Jurassic Park film, obviously. I won't go into details, but just a really fun summer blockbuster film. I got goosebumps at one point, which is rare for me. To get goosebumps. I really did enjoy that movie.
I like the second one, The Lost World, because to me it's perfect because it takes the most interesting character from the first one, Jeff Goldblum, and gives him a whole movie. It's like Jeff Goldblum unplugged.
I really am a big fan of Jeff Goldblum, but it's like, I don't know. And his character was so good in the first movie. It's like to try to give him his own is tough, in my opinion. He did good, though. Don't get me wrong. I'm not bagging on 2 and 3. It's just hard to live up to number one, and I think Jurassic World does. I think it keeps up the pace and is a good pairing with that. I think so. The lone man in this room, but it reminded me of what it was like to watch the first one, whereas the other two I think they maybe tried to carve their own story. I felt like Jurassic World was, I felt like I was watching the first one again.
Very cool. Haven't seen it yet.
Speaking of that great kind of movie going experience, I'm curious, what's the most powerful experience you've had at your own theater at the IMAX?
There's so many. I keep saying that the theater's state of the art, and we're so antiquated when it comes to being film versus digital from a technology standpoint, but it truly is kind of a state-of-the-art theater. I mean, the presentations that we put in that theater are just stunning. I mean, you can't get it anywhere else anymore. It's kind of, we're the last print-based IMAX theater in the region, basically. You have to go to Chicago to get to the closest one, and they don't always run their films in print. Interstellar was an amazing presentation in IMAX because Chris Nolan, you know, had shot a big chunk of that movie with IMAX cameras. That's the key to the large format, is that you have to shoot it in the large format to get that full kind of awe-inspiring, you know, IMAX experience. And he was one of the first studio directors to really kind of latch onto that, and he's become quite good at it. And it is when you shoot in large format, it's different. You know, the angles are a little bit different. You have to line up the cameras a little bit differently because it is such a big frame. So, you know, that was a gorgeous one. Traditional IMAX movie, Hubble 3D, was a really, really beautiful film. It was the last film cameras that went up to space. So they actually connected an IMAX camera up to the Hubble telescope when they did the upgrades to that. And the imagery is stunning. D-Day 3D is another movie that we're playing that we actually just wrapped up, but it'll be back in August. Which is a strategy film about Normandy, meant to educate children about how important that day was in our history as a world, basically. Very well done film. I mean, there isn't an unenjoyable, you know, non-impactful experience that happens in that theater. Like, you just walk out and you feel changed almost.
I agree. Actually, the first IMAX film I ever saw was Everest.
Oh, yeah.
And I was a kid, and that was in Chicago.
You and everybody else. That was like the highest grossing IMAX film of all times until they started doing Hollywood stuff.
Yeah. And I hadn't had an IMAX experience like that until I went to your theater. I had seen other IMAX films, but I just don't think any of the other IMAX theaters are around here quite as impressive.
And it's inevitable, you know, we will go digital. I mean, we have to. But our plan is to keep both. We're actually going to keep the digital and the film. So when we can show something on film, we're going to show it on film. There's just not a digital projector that can compare to what we do with film. But, you know, every day it gets harder and harder to find movies. They're not making prints. It's just, this film stock doesn't even hardly exist much anymore. It's very expensive for them to make. So we kind of have to add that digital to our repertoire, if you will. it'll be interesting. You know, they're saying the next Star Wars movie is going to have IMAX prints, which would be phenomenal.
Yeah.
Batman versus Superman. The hardcore film geek, you know, filmmakers are seeking out IMAX as a tool to make their movies bigger and badder, and they're using the IMAX cameras to get these full frame shots. So there's always going to be a place for a film based or a full frame IMAX theater, which is a traditional IMAX theater. So we're going to keep that around and keep that spirit alive.
Speaking of that kind of old school spirit, have you considered showing older stuff, like maybe 2001?
To my knowledge, we have the only 70mm projector still in action, which is different than IMAX. IMAX is 1570, so it's a little different. But we have a 70mm in our booth. And we do, we ran The Master in 70mm when it came out. It did a small run in 70mm. We were hopeful to do Hateful Eight in 70mm because he was going to do a release, but it's coming out at Christmas. And if we do Star Wars, we're not going to be able to do both, unfortunately. But maybe a later run on that in 70mm. So, yes, we actually have a print of Ben-Hur sitting in our booth. Ben-Hur in Total Recall, actually, in 70mm.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, Total Recall?
Oh, the original.
Wow.
We broke that out and watched it one night just for fun, and it was gorgeous.
Oh, man, I'm jealous.
It's hard to get 70mm prints, though. They typically don't leave California very often. But, yes, definitely if we can, you know, we do. But it's a lot harder than you think to get those things unless you know people that own them or you're putting some sort of retrospective together. But, you know, Ben-Hur, we always toy with the idea of bringing Ben-Hur out around Easter time. We were actually going to do it this year, but the Final Four fell over Easter weekend, and it just made it really hard for people to get to the theater. So next year. Lawrence of Arabia, maybe I'll throw that in.
Ooh, this is perfect. It's all, like, coming full circle. We have, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Lawrence of Arabia. It's perfect. It's almost like we planned it.
We did, didn't we? I mean, I'm looking at the notes. They're sitting in front of me.
I guess we should mention where Matt is going to be next week. He is doing a pretty cool event at the Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library. Mm-hmm. He will be interviewing the director Bob Weed, who did an adaptation of one of Kurt Vonnegut's novels, Mother Night, which stars Nick Nolte. He also did a few other notable things, but that escape me right now. But
we'll
Matt,
focus on Nolte.
Yeah, well, exactly. But Matt will be there Thursday. That's July 16th. Is that the same night as the Indie Film Fest?
Yep. Yeah. You can do both. I'm sure we can figure that out.
I was going to say there's going to be a bit of a conflict there. But he'll be there. I forgot what time it starts. I'm sure that information is on WFYI.org or
most likely.
Good. And again, why is Matt not here today? Is he doing one of his Shakespeare runs?
No, the Richmond Shakespeare Festival is over. He was unable to make it today because his daughter Emma had her recital for the end of her IRT summer camp.
Aww.
Yeah.
That's adorable. that's a great note to end on, if you'd like to.
Hey, we've got some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Sam,
mm-hmm.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for hosting again.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Craig, plug the festival. Plug the site.
IndieFilmFest.org, IMAXIndie.com if you want to come down to the IMAX Theater. The two worlds collide on the Fridays of the Film Festival. We'll bring in Film Festival films to the IMAX Theater. But all the rest of them take place at the IMA. So come check us out. Visit the website. We have all kinds of fun films, serial cinema, all of it. Something for everybody.
Very cool. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Go to Indie Film Fest next week. This has been Film Sociology, a film talk show on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. We gone. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.